Blog Talk Radio.
Skyrocketing healthcare and insurance costs. Extremely modest gains against chronic disease. Thousands die yearly due to drug reactions. What can be done? Thomas Edison is quoted as declaring, "The doctor of the future will give no medicine, but interest his patients in diet and nutrition, exercise, in the care of the human frame. He will teach them about the cause of all disease." The doctors of the future are here. Welcome to Phase 3 Wellness with your host, Keith Henry, ND, one of the doctors of the future.
Good afternoon and welcome to Phase 3 Wellness. Thank you for joining me. I am your host, Dr. Keith Henry. Welcome to all of my listeners, wherever you may be listening from in the world. As always, a very special welcome to my friends over in Costa Rica. We have an exciting show for you today, a very informative show. I am your host, Dr. Keith Henry. I am a naturopathic doctor. I address natural medicine from a Christian perspective. As I said last week, most or all natural medicine or holistic medicine will have a spiritual component. Most of them will have a spiritual component, will be from an Eastern spiritualistic component, will be the source of their spiritual element, wherein I am a Christian naturopath, so the spiritual element that we use, it comes from a Christian perspective, a biblical perspective of healing, seeing as how Jesus did a great majority of healing, and the Bible actually carries quite a bit of information with respect to healing. Again, I am your host, Dr. Keith Henry. If you would like to call in during the show, you can do so at 917-889-2207. That's 917-889-2207. I am going to open the chat room here. You can go to chat if you would like on blog. If you're listening on blogtalkradio.com, just go to blogtalkradio.com, or rather go to blogtalkradio.com/phase3wellness. And I just opened that room there. If you would like to send in a question or make a comment via the chat room, you can do so, or you can call in at 917-889-2207. I do know that most people do not like to call in. That is okay. Nevertheless, we're going to be talking a bit a day about the American healthcare system. And it'll be in our first segment, which is the Weekend Natural News Review segment. Our second segment is the Healing Food segment, and our last segment is the Healing Herb Healing Supplement segment. We will seek to get through all three segments today. We actually have pretty interesting information to cover. Now, in our first segment, we'll be talking about some of the top 10 ways the American healthcare system fails. And this is an article. I will be analyzing an article from Dr. Mercola. Again, just if you've not listened before, this first segment is I look at articles that have come out during the week, and we discuss, analyze, talk about them. And we'll also talk about another article from naturalnews.com. The Mike Adams there, the publisher there, the editor, he produced an interesting article on this week on unnecessary surgeries on your wisdom teeth. Very interesting article. Then we'll talk about, again, in our main article, we'll talk about the top 10 ways the American healthcare system fails. These are things that you may not know about our healthcare system. Some of them are very shocking. Then in our Healing Food segment, we will be discussing an article that was entitled "Suppressed Science, Garlic Proven to Kill Brain Cancer Cells Without Side Effects." Interesting article there, too, we'll be talking about. It's a relatively short article, but we'll talk about it briefly and kind of analyze it, and I'll probably put a link up to an article that I have on garlic on my website called "Garlic, God's Antibiotic." And lastly, we'll continue our discussion from last week. If you missed it, I highly suggest you go back and listen to that. We began to talk about the herb Oregon grape root, and about its capacity to heal as a natural antibiotic. We talked about olive leaf extract before that, and if we finish with garlic with Oregon grape root, which we should, we'll move on to Ashab, which is a herb that many of you have probably never heard of, and we will talk about that and how it can be used etc. Again, I am your host, Dr. Keith Henry. Thank you for joining me. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll jump right into our program for today.
How do you feel? No, really. How do you feel? Do you feel lively? Are you bursting with energy? Or do you feel run down and suffer from a lack of energy most of the time? Have frequent colds, aches and pains of one sort or another? The fact of the matter is that most people in America are not well. But you can begin to change all of that today by simply visiting the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog of Keith Henry, ND, at www.phase3ministries.com/WordPress. Go there now and explore the wealth of amazing wellness information. That's www.phase3ministries.com/WordPress, the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog.
You're listening to Phase 3 Wellness with Dr. Keith Henry. Be sure to listen right here every week at the same time. You can also visit Dr. Henry on Facebook at facebook.com/naturedoc. Thanks for listening, and here's to your health.
Hi, and welcome back to Phase 3 Wellness. Thank you for listening. I am your host, Dr. Keith Henry, and we're going to go ahead and start our first article in this Week in Natural News Review segment. And this article, as I mentioned before the break, is entitled Wisdom Teeth Surgery, a Deadly Dental Scam. Young mother falls into coma following visit to dentist. And this is by the editor of naturalnews.com, Mike Adams, also known as the Health Ranger. It was published today, actually, so it's fresh off the press. And in it, he begins to talk about some of the unnecessary but removal of teeth, your wisdom teeth. And in this particular article, he talks about there being many dentists who are doing this unnecessarily. And he goes on to point out, now remember when I'm talking about this article, he's not talking about cases where there may be some medical reason that the wisdom teeth need to be removed. He's talking about unnecessary removal, non-medical reasons for removing these teeth. And he goes on to say how conventional dentists receive a huge percentage of their revenue news by scaring, he says, patients into a procedure called wisdom teeth extraction, which is usually medically unjustified. He says across virtually the entire industry of conventional dentistry, this dangerous surgery scam is pushed on patients with unethical fear tactics that claim asymptomatic wisdom teeth, that means teeth with no symptoms, pain, or problems, must be surgically removed because they are there. He goes on to point out how there is no logic or scientific justification for the routine removal of wisdom teeth from the mouth. And when this medically unjustified procedure is pushed onto patients as a source of dental revenue, it subjects patients to unnecessary health risks that can literally endanger their lives. He goes on to say that holistic dentists would tend to be far more reluctant to recommend removal of wisdom teeth merely because they are present. He says, and then he cites a case in point that happened recently in Hawaii to a 23-year-old young lady by the name of Kristen Tavares. And he says she was a mother of two who was now in a coma after something went wrong with her wisdom teeth removal. And then he quotes Hawaii News Now, and he's saying that for the second time in 3 months, there has been a dental tragedy in Hawaii. This time it's a young mother of two from Hilo on life support. She'd gone down to a dentist to get her wisdom teeth pulled and never woke up. She went to have all four wisdom teeth pulled, the newspaper reported, at a dentist's office in Hilo, but something went wrong. She was eventually flown to Maui Medical Center, where family says she's unresponsive and her heart is too weak to do medical procedures. Mike Adams goes on to say further in this article that the real tragedy is that this Kristen Tavares is a victim of a revenue-generating dental procedure that is often little more than a money-making scam. He says, with few exceptions, nearly all the wisdom teeth extraction conducted across the dental industry is medically unnecessary and ethically compromised. He says, dentists are taught that wisdom teeth, quote, must be extracted because they're there. And he says this is a highly irrational, illogical stance that puts patients' lives at risk for no good reason. He goes on to say further in this article that dentists are further taught to use scare tactics on patients in much the same way that cancer doctors use scare tactics to convince people to submit to high-profit chemotherapy using drugs that are sold at huge profits by the cancer clinics themselves. He says further that such scare tactics include authoritative sounding claims like, quote, if you don't have all your wisdom teeth extracted, you will suffer teeth crowding and experience extreme pain, end quote. He says it turns out that in most cases, these scare tactics are little more than lies. And finally, he relates an experience that he himself had, which I've had a similar experience where they were going to take out four of my wisdom teeth. And there was nothing wrong with them. This is probably 20 years ago. There was nothing wrong with them, but they were just going to take them out just in case anyway. I opted not to let them do so, and I haven't had any problems with my wisdom teeth. After seeing some of the pain and agony that I've seen so many people in after having their wisdom teeth removed, I opted not to have mine removed. And Mike Adams in this article points out how he had a similar situation some years ago. He says, I have all my wisdom teeth this very day, and as you can see from my numerous photos and videos, I have no teeth crowding and have never experienced any pain whatsoever from my wisdom teeth. He says further that a dentist, however, tried to convince me that if I didn't have my teeth surgically removed, I would suffer all sorts of problems with my mouth, including misaligned and ugly teeth and severe pain. He says they were all malicious lies, of course, and they are told to patients every single day across America by dishonest, unethical dentists who care more about their own profits than the safety of their patients. He says further in this article, with their insidious scare tactics, dentists put the lives of innocent people at risk every single day for no reason other than making money. And he says, then he goes on to list a few other cases where where their health have been put in, or their lives rather, have been put in great danger, and some have actually died as a result of these surgeries. He cites a case in Portland, Maine, where a teenager died days after having his wisdom teeth removed, sending the entire community in shock, reported CBS News. He cites CBS News as saying, on Friday night, 2 days after the surgery, his condition deteriorated. He awoke in the early morning hours Saturday, and soon after died in his arms. This was also reported by the Maine Sunday Telegram. He cites another case with a talented teen musician who died in his mother's arms 3 days after routine wisdom teeth extraction. This was reported in the Daily Mail. And went on to say, a talented high school musician has died suddenly in Maine, which is the same story it seems to be, just 3 days after having surgery to remove impacted wisdom teeth. Benjamin Edward Lamontagne died in his mother's arms in the early hours of Saturday after his condition started to deteriorate after the routine procedure. Then he cites another case where he says the family of a 24-year-old California man who died unexpectedly after having had his wisdom teeth removed is questioning the medical care he received during a routine oral procedure. And this was reported ABC News. It says his condition quickly deteriorated and he was transferred to a hospital where he died 3 days later. His family and friends have questioned the treatment he received from Dr. Stephen Paul, an oral surgeon in Temecula, California. And the article was on the site ABC News, or rather someone told ABC News, or as reported from ABC News, quote, what's more shocking is the healthy 24-year-old goes in for an operation as routine as having his wisdom teeth removed and died in the process. Tony Kelso, a friend of the Lipinski family, told ABCNews.com, it's inconceivable. And Mike Adams in his article was on to say that, truth be told, wisdom teeth extraction procedures are killing innocent people. He said if these were life-saving procedures, the risk-reward calculation might be justified. But in most cases, these are completely unnecessary and unjustified procedures pushed onto patients, he says, for the sole purpose of generating revenues for dentists. And then he goes on to say further, in many patients, there is no benefit whatsoever from wisdom teeth removal, and yet the risk of complications and death is unacceptably high. He said the only reward for many of these procedures, it turns out, is that the dentist gets to bill an insurance company for the procedure, claiming the teeth were quote, impacted. But he says even this term is often a lie. He says dentists can and do use the term impacted to simply describe teeth which are touching each other. This alone seems to be sufficient for them to engage, he says, in wildly invasive, risky surgeries that can actually literally kill people. He says, had I allowed my former dentist to surgically remove my wisdom teeth, I might not even be alive today. Finally, he goes on to say in closing off this article, he says, in a medical context, the single most important word that you can that can save your life is no. No to the dentist, no to the doctors. He says, do not be seduced by their insidious, unethical fear tactics, which are nothing more than marketing strategies to make you feel vulnerable so you will submit to their false authority. Mike Adams goes on to say further in this article, every surgical procedure carries a risk of death. Doctors and dentists tend to gloss over all these risks and minimize the extreme damage their procedures cause to your tissues and health. He says if a doctor tells you you'll be out of the hospital in 2 days and fully recovered at home in a week, you should probably assume you will need a month to recover if you survive the procedure at all. People really do die every day on the operating table, including for procedures like bariatric surgery or which is gastric bypass surgery. Then he cites a study by the journal Nature. Nature is actually considered a very prestigious journal. And he cites a study that nearly 1 out of 20 patients undergoing gastric bypass surgery actually is dead within 1 year. 1 out of 20. Wow, that's pretty high. And then he says, think long and hard about what you are doing before allowing a doctor or dentist to put you under and perform a highly invasive procedure. He says, understand risk versus reward. Understand that every time you allow a medical procedure to put you under the knife, you may not ever wake up. Finally, he says, I'm not saying that all surgeries or wisdom teeth extraction procedures are unnecessary. There are times when surgeons have saved people's lives from extreme trauma, hence automobile accidents, chainsaw accidents, construction site accidents, etc. But surgeons and dentists are not in the business of fully educating patients about the risk of their procedures, he says. Otherwise, far more people would say no, and they would lose their business. Therefore, he says, if you want to understand the risk of any procedure you might be considering, you need to do your own homework and rely on yourself, not your doctor or your dentist, to research the full risks that are involved. He says, the more you learn to say no to surgeries, prescription drugs, and mercury vaccine shots, the longer you will likely stay alive. This is true. You should only engage in invasive procedures when it's absolutely necessary. And like he says, whatever the procedure, be it a procedure from your dentist or doctor, sometimes they are necessary. But there's a risk-reward. Is the reward that you hope to gain from the surgery or procedure, is the reward from that risk, is it consumerate? So think about it for a minute. If you're going to go under the knife and risk dying, sometimes something that's basically simple. I can remember some years ago when the singer James Brown's wife, she went into basically for a simple procedure, supposedly it's been a basic plastic surgery procedure that was shouldn't have taken her a day, maybe a day in the hospital, and she would have been out, and she ended up dying. I don't know if it was in the hospital or the doctor's office, whichever one, but she ended up dying for something that was supposed to have been something which was supposed to have been something so simple and routine, and she ended up dead. So again, there are a lot of things that go on, and you need to understand the risk reward. Ask questions, do your research, and ask more questions, especially in cases where you're going to be put on some drug that has lots of side effects, or you're going to be undergoing some invasive procedure. Even if it seems simple, just understand, and even if it is routine, just understand there's always risk, and you want to know if your risk reward ratio is tipped more and favorably in the direction of the reward as opposed to the risk. Now what we'll do is we'll move on to our second. This is our main article that we'll be covering, and this is from Marcola.com, and it was published actually about on the 15th. So we're like one day off from our weekend natural news review, but I think it's a very important article that we get here, so we'll just stick it in here. Particular article, he entitled it, The Top 10 Ways the American Healthcare System Fails. And I titled my discussion of his article in this broadcast, Top 10 Things You May Not Know About the American Healthcare System. And in this particular article, Dr. Mercola starts off by saying, from time to time, medical experts reverse course on certain practices and procedures when science dictates a change in the standard of care. And then he points out one classic example of a reversal is when hormone therapy for menopausal women came to a screeching halt, when so many women began developing blood clots, stroke, and breast and uterine, as well as breast and uterine cancers. He said that in an attempt to determine the overall effectiveness of our medical care, the Mayo Clinic tracked the frequency of these medical reversals over the past decade and published a report in Mayo Clinic Proceedings in August of 2013. The results, he says, are discussed by lead researcher Dr. Vinay Prasad in the featured video that he has in this article. And if you're on the chat, I'll put a link to that in the chat room here momentarily. He goes on to say that according to this study, Prasad and his team found that reversals are common across all classes of medical practice, and a significant proportion of medical treatments offer no benefit at all. So let's stop and think about that for a minute before we go any further. Number one, you had a team from Mayo Clinic, very prestigious clinic, and in place in the medical care system or the healthcare system where, like in the instance, you know, they come down and they're giving all of these women these hormones. And it was just a thing to do. It was standard operational procedure. And then when these women began to complain, and when the medical evidence began to come out, these women were developing blood clots and having strokes and developing breast and uterine cancers. Then they said, wait a minute, we need to reverse this. And so they wanted to look and see how many reversals had there been, et cetera. And they found out. He and his team found out that reversals are actually quite common across all classes of medical practice, and as well as a significant, they also found that a significant portion of medical treatments offer no benefit at all. He says further, Dr. Mercola says further in his article, in fact, they found that 146 reversals of previously established practices, treatments, and procedures over the past 10 years. So they found 146 reversals of previously established practices. These are not something that will fly by now. These are things that became established practices in the healthcare system. Over the past 10 years, there have been 146 reversals. He says many new medical treatments gain popularity over older standards of care due to clever marketing, he says, more than solid science. Conflict of interest are rampant in medical research. And he goes on to say, further, shiny new medical treatments nearly always come with hefty price tags, which help to drive up the astronomical cost of healthcare in the United States. He says, further, in addition to the end of our routine hormone therapy for menopausal women, you will probably recall the following policy reversal over the past decade. Then he lists changing the schedule for women's Pap tests and men's rectal exam, both of which used to be yearly. Next, another thing that was changed, moving the starting age of women's yearly mammograms from age 40 to 50. Use of COX-2 inhibitors such as Vioxx, a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug, or what's commonly known as NSAID, that directly targets the COX-2 enzyme. Vioxx killed more than 60,000 people before being pulled from the market in 2004. And so here you have, he points out three reversals that many people, because they were popular, might have heard of. Finally, he says more than half of all medical procedures are of no benefit and many actually cause harm. Now, he goes on to talk about this. So more than half of all medical procedures, it was discovered, are of absolutely no benefit. He goes on to say the most telling data in the report show just how many common medical treatments are not helping patients at all. And actually, some of them are actually harming them. This is of the studies that tested in existing standard of care, 40% reversed the practice compared to only 38% reaffirming it. So the remaining 22% were inconclusive. This means that between 40 and 78% of the medical testing, treatments, and procedures you receive are of no benefit to you or are actually harmful as determined by clinical studies. between 40 and 78%. That's an astronomical amount under the circumstances. He says, Prasad writes, the head of the study, quote, reversal harms patients who undergo the contraindicated therapy during the years it was in favor, and those patients who undergo the therapy in the lag time before a change in medical practice. Most importantly, it creates a loss of faith in the medical system by physicians and patients. The solution to reversal is upfront, randomized clinical trials for new clinical practice and a systematic to evaluate practices already in existence. Marcola says further in his article, in an editorial, John P. A. Leonidas, M.D., stresses the importance of not only promoting effective medical practices, but also disseminating knowledge about ineffective practices that should be abandoned. Many therapies, he says, continue long after they are deemed useless or harmful due to inertia in the system. He suggests using incentives to urge physicians to begin testing the effectiveness of common practices and calls for a renewed commitment to rigorous clinical research. And then after here, now he goes on into, Dr. Marcola goes on into the top 10 failures of the American healthcare system. And I will hasten to say that had it not been for these failures, had the healthcare system listened and not been so arrogant and so bullheaded and going and not listening, and not giving alternative therapies, giving people an option for alternative therapies, had not the insurance companies been so in bed with which is apparently the pharmaceutical companies, because if you think about it for a moment, why would you, if you were an insurance company and you were going to go, a procedure was going to be done at a hospital that was going to cost you to have to pay out, say, $50,000, where there was a potential where there was an alternative therapy available to an alternative practitioner that was proven and had good track record, and that could be done for maybe $2,500, but you won't cover that under insurance, but you will cover a procedure that may cost $50,000. Let me give you an example. Many people when they go through gallbladder surgery, many people these days, a gallbladder surgery can run anywhere from $35,000 to $50,000, if not more. We know in the natural health field, in most cases, an inflamed gallbladder can be dealt with relatively easily, and the inflammation can be drawn out relatively easily and can be healed for a lot less than that, for a fraction of that. Will an insurance company cover that from a natural practitioner? No, not in general. So you have to ask yourself the question, is there something in the system where they're scratching one another's back, where the insurance companies would almost always choose to go with something that's wildly expensive and may or may not work? And so the point I'm trying to make is when you have that and when the cost keeps going up and people are complaining, it created an atmosphere in which allowed the Obamacare law, the Affordable Care Act, known as Obamacare, it allowed the atmosphere, the mental atmosphere, to develop, which allowed a law like that to pass, which many, many people are unsatisfied with and even angry about. And so, but when we allow things to go on and on and on and no one does anything to deal with them, we create a situation to where an environment to where these things can happen. And so Dr. Marcola goes on to say further in this article under the top 10 failures of the American healthcare system, he says in 2007, the Commonwealth Fund conducted a large survey comparing the healthcare attitudes and experience of people across 7 countries. And these countries were Australia, New Zealand, the United Kingdom, Germany, the Netherlands, Canada, and the United States. He says the results are quite telling about how broken the American healthcare system really is. He says of the 7 countries, Americans were the least likely to report being relatively satisfied with their healthcare. Then he says, let's take a look at 10 of the most significant findings of that survey. Number one, he says, we spend the most money on healthcare but get the least in return. He said the U.S. spends more on health care than the next 10 biggest spenders combined. Those spenders being Japan, Germany, France, China, the U.S., Italy, Canada, Brazil, Spain, and Australia. Yet the U.S. ranks last in health and mortality when compared with 17 other developed nations. So here we have a situation then where we spend the most money on health care, but we get the least in return. And he goes on to say that we spend more on health care than the next 10 biggest spenders combined. So if you took Japan, Germany, France, China, the UK, Italy, Canada, Brazil, Spain, and Australia, who are the next 10 biggest spenders, and combined the money that they spend in health care, we spend more than all of those combined together. He says further, sadly, 30 cents of every dollar spent on medical care in America is wasted, which amounts to about $750 billion annually. That's wasted. He says that is the same amount the Department of Defense estimates we spent on the entire Iraqi war. So we spend $750 billion a year, spending more than that in healthcare, but 30% of every dollar is wasted. So we waste more annually on healthcare than was spent in Iraq over 10 years, which was about $750 billion. He says this $750 billion of waste is made up of inefficient delivery of care and excessive administrative costs, unnecessary services, inflated prices, prevention failures, and outright fraud. He says the largest defrauder of the federal government is the pharmaceutical industry. He goes on to say further, 35% of Americans have difficulty paying their medical bills, and nearly two-thirds of all bankruptcies are linked to inability to pay medical bills due to being uninsured or underinsured. He says medical impoverishment is nearly unheard of in wealthy nations other than the U.S. because all have some form of national health insurance. So here we said again, I'm not sure whether he's advocating national health insurance here, but he's simply laying out the facts that even if you have insurance, and if anything going to change under this new system, who knows? But as he's writing up this article, he's pointing out how the system is so inefficient, that two-thirds of all bankruptcies were caused by medical issues or medical bills, even though who were insured but were underinsured. So, and remember, we listened to some of the arguments when the bill was being pushed, Obamacare. One of the facts that they argued was that two-thirds of all bankruptcies were caused by medical bills. And so, you know, our system shouldn't be so expensive to where someone gets sick and they go into bankruptcy in order to get decent health care. And again, as you would know, as you listen here, my solution is they should give natural health practitioners, be they naturopaths, herbalists, homeopaths, whatever, more of a leeway to practice and take the monopoly off of the practice in this country. Allow the people to choose which direction they wish to go. If they wish to go the allopathic medicine way, then that's their choice. If they wish to go to naturopathic, homeopathic, or whatever, that's their choice. If they're going to pay for it, if they're going to be paying insurance premium, they should be able to choose where they want to go. Now, he goes on to say further in this article, by dissecting medical bills, Time magazine writer Stephen Brill says, we can see exactly how and why you are overspending and where your money is going. He says Americans are being grossly overcharged. Even nonprofit hospitals are making greater profits than some prosperous for-profit businesses. He says the entire system unfairly affects the poor and uninsured as they are charged a full inflated price, while those with coverage have their costs radically reduced through pre-negotiated lower rates. He says, how much would you spend for a hospital stay? Certainly more than you would pay for even the most extravagant vacation. The average cost of a hospital stay is $18,000 compared to $6,200 among OECD nations, according to a George Washington University study. He said things add up rather quickly when you're in an American hospital. In fact, you can go into the hospital for a few hours, not even an overnight stay, stay for observation for a few hours. and it will easily cost you upwards of $15,000 by tests and this easily. It could easily get up to $18,000 or more, and that's not even including the different other calls from the physicians and the doctors and this. It could get up really quick. He goes on to say further in his article, for example, a liter of normal saline rings up. The saline is basically salt water. A liter rings up at $546. The 1 liter bag of saline contains about 9 grams of salt, less than 2 teaspoons, which costs 44 cents to a dollar to produce. But then the bag makes it way from the manufacturer through a series of giant, he says, group purchasing middlemen and distributors before arriving at your hospital's pharmacy. Upon arrival, the IV bag has a mystery formula applied to it, and a price is magically determined, which is then recorded on your hospital's charge master. No one really understands how these prices are calculated. So something that costs 44 cents to make ends up costing $546. He says, only recently did the federal government release the price the hospitals charge for the 100 most common medical procedures, revealing tremendous and seemingly random variation in the cost of service. He says, for example, if you need a hip replacement, you can spend $5,300 in Ada, Oklahoma, or you can fork over $223,000 for exactly the same procedure in Monterey Park, California. He said, you can find out how your state compares an average fee for service using an interactive online chart created by the Washington Post. So let me get this straight. If I go to Oklahoma, I can get a hip replacement surgery, which I may not even need, for $5,300, or I can go to Monterey Park, California, for the exact same surgery and pay $223,000. And then we wonder why a law like the Obamacare law can pass, a law that so many people are uptight about. Of course it's going to pass in an environment like this. Number two reason, he says, our chronic disease rates are extraordinarily high. Americans have the second highest rate of chronic disease of the 7 countries examined, with Australia being number one. With all of the money we're spending, he says, what are we missing? This statistic reflects poor preventative care and lack of attention to lifestyle habits such as diet, exercise, stress, sleep, and electron deficiency. So here we go. Here we go again. This is what I said earlier. If they would have allow the natural health practitioners, who are more experts along the lines of chronic diseases, preventive steps, alone we could reduce the healthcare costs by who knows how many hundreds of millions of dollars. He said the majority of Americans, adults and children, are becoming insulin resistant due to the junk food-based diets loaded with sugar, processed grains, and chemical additives. Insulin dysfunction is putting many in a state of perpetual inflammation and driving up the rates of chronic disease. And Americans consume nearly 4,000 calories per day on average, more than anyone else in the world. Yet, they are malnourished, he says, because most of these calories are from processed food, therefore devoid of nutrition. Third, poor coordination of care. He says, this issue is tied to the problem of waste. So we drop the ball when it comes to managing patient care, especially if you have a complicated illness requiring multiple providers. So as a result, we have poor access to medical records, duplicate testing, gaps in communication, confidentiality violations, and he says rushed and fragmented health care. And so basically he points out an infographic, or he cites an infographic data that was created by Jonathan Govett from multiple sources, and this infographic points out how 3 out of 10 lab tests are reordered because the results can't be found. 68% of specialists receive no information from the primary care provider prior to the referral visit. 60-70% of referrals go unscheduled, and 25% of appointments are missed. 7,000 people die every year from sloppy physician handwriting. Number four, most Americans do not have a primary care provider. One of the reasons American healthcare is so properly managed or so poorly managed, he says, is that they are least likely to have primary care providers. There are 5/10 general physicians per 1,000 people, or half a general physician per every 1,000 people in the U.S. He says, but the average among these other nations that he mentioned is 1.23. He says Americans are also the most likely to say that their physician doesn't know important information about the medical history, which has dire implications for quality of care And he says increases the likelihood of medical errors, and which could possibly, in many cases, lead to death. Number five reason, thing that you might not know about our healthcare system. It can't be argued, he says, that medical errors are the leading cause of death in the U.S., higher than heart disease, higher than cancer. So medical errors are the leading cause of death in the U.S., not heart disease, not cancer, but medical errors. He said the latest review showed that about 1,000 people die every day from hospital mistakes alone. This equates to 4 jumbo jets worth of passengers every week, but the death toll is largely ignored. So if 4 jumbo, like remember this flight that went down, I think it had over 200 people over in Malaysia, and it's been in the news day in and day out because they can't find the people, some 200 people. And here we have the equivalent of 4 jumbo jets crashing every day that are dying in the healthcare system, and we hear very little about it. He says further types of errors include inappropriate medical treatments, hospital-acquired infections, unnecessary surgeries, adverse drug reactions, and operating on the wrong body part or even on the wrong patient. 1 in 4 hospital patients are harmed by preventable medical mistakes in this country. He says that 800,000 people die every year as a result. Of those 800,000, 250,000 of them die as a result of medication errors. That is astonishing, astounding, when you think about it. So it's a risk even going into the hospital. It is a risk. Number 6, he says Americans do have shorter waits for non-elective surgeries compared with other developed nations. Only 4% of us wait more than 6 months, which is considerably less than the Canadians who are 14% or Britain 15%. Of them wait for more than 6 months. However, he says, when you consider how many Americans lack access to any health care at all, the wait time advantage disappears. He says nearly one-third of Americans are uninsured or underinsured. 25% do not visit a doctor when they're sick due to the cost. 23% can't fill their prescriptions. He said this is far worse in America than in any of the other countries surveyed. He says in Canada, only 5% skip care, and the U.K., only 3%. He says, as you know, Dr. Mercola says, as you know, I'm not a fan of using the standard healthcare approach in every situation. However, if you become acutely ill or injured, lack of access to care can be devastating. He says, number 7, we don't pay physicians in proportion to the quality of care. Because most other countries reward physicians for good care with financial incentives. For example, in the UK, he says 95% of physicians are paid, at least in part, according to the quality of care they deliver. In Australia, it's 72%. The US score is lower than anyone else at 30%. He says, number 8, our health care is inconvenient. Americans' access to after-hours services early in the morning, later in the evening, and on weekends and holidays is just, he says, mediocre. As for access to evening hours, we lag behind Australia, Canada, Germany, and New Zealand. He says further that a full 67% of Americans, more than in any other country, say it's difficult to get care on nights, weekends, or holidays without resorting to the emergency room where care is costlier and if your injury is not life-threatening, inefficient, and time-consuming. He says only 30% of Americans report that they can access a doctor in the very day they need one, as opposed to 41% of Britons and 55% of Germans. The number 8 reason, he says, about 70% of Americans are satisfied with their physician's bedside manner, which is lower than the Canadians, Australians, and New Zealanders. He says, but we are 5% more satisfied than the Britons and well above the Germans or Dutch. He says, however, when you look at specifics, we compare less favorably. He says Americans are less happy about how well their physicians explain things to them, how long they spend with them, or how smoothly their appointments go with respect to things like coordinating records and scheduling. Number 10, he says, you probably heard reports claiming that Britons and Canadians are highly dissatisfied with their healthcare system. He says, but this survey proved that Americans have them beat by a substantial margin. So essentially what he's saying is, based upon this survey, yes, you have Britons who are complaining and unsatisfied with their healthcare system. And 2, yes, you have Canadians who are highly dissatisfied and complaining about their healthcare system. But when you look at the entire picture, more Americans complain about their healthcare system and by a substantial margin. So Americans were the least likely of all seven countries, he said, to report relative satisfaction with their healthcare system. He says only 16% of Americans report being happy, compared with 26% in the UK and 42% in the Netherlands. 34% of Americans want a complete overhaul in the healthcare system, whereas only 12% of Canadians and 15% of Britons say the same. So we pay the most for our healthcare, but we have the lowest satisfying ratings, even lower than those who spend more time waiting in line, he says. And he cites Ursula Klein of the Washington Post, and he says, quote, "There's no other area of American life where we collectively accept such a bad deal. We spend more than any other nation on our military, but our military is unquestionably the mightiest in the world. We spend the most and on our universities, but our universities are the best on the planet. But we spend the most on our health care, twice as much as anyone else, and our health system is mediocre to poor, with 47 million of us lacking the insurance necessary to easily access it, being our health care." Finally, Marcola closes out at the last part of this article, and he says, the U.S. does not have a healthcare system. We have a disease management system dependent on expensive drugs and invasive surgeries. He says it is a system with a mission to maximize profits as opposed to helping people maintain or regain their health. He says the Affordable Health Care Act is likely to make matters worse rather than better, as the act does not include any illness prevention strategies, nor does it contain any measures to rein in out-of-control health care costs related to overcharges. He said instead it expands an already flawed model of care that is one of the leading causes of both death and bankruptcy for Americans. Then he says Ronald Reagan hit it right on the nose when he said, quote, "Government doesn't solve problems, it subsidizes them," end quote. He says integrative medicine is a better alternative to the current system, as it offers a combination of conventional medicine therapies and complementary alternative therapies for which there is some high-quality scientific evidence for safety and effectiveness. He says the more you take responsibility for your own health by nurturing your body, the less you would need to rely on the disease care system that passes for health care in this country. And I agree wholeheartedly with Dr. Marcola. He goes out and he points out systematically 10 of the issues. There are many more that he could have pointed out. But when you look at the numbers, you know, a lot of people get into this into the conversations and they make arguments based on emotions and preconceived notions. But when you look at the hard numbers, data, the data, it is what it is. And as he said, we don't really have a healthcare system here. We have a disease management system, which is dependent, as he says, on expensive drugs and invasive surgeries. And it's also designed to maximize profits as opposed to helping people maintain or regain their health. And as he said, the Affordable Health Care Act, also known as Obamacare, if you really look at it, whether you're a fan or a foe, is irrelevant. It's what the results are, and the results are that it is actually likely to make matters worse than better, because as the act does not include any illness prevention strategies, nor does it contain any measures to rein in the out-of-control healthcare costs related to these overcharges that makes healthcare so expensive in the first place, it actually encourages and expands a system and a model that's already broken. So instead of really fixing the model, it's throwing more money at it and forcing people to get involved into this program. And they're not really doing anything but basically add fuel to take the car in the direction that it was already going on the highway in the wrong direction to oncoming traffic. So all that money was spent to pass it and all these millions of dollars being spent to implement it. And guess what? We're going to get essentially more of the same, because the same people behind the scenes are apparently in charge. And it's for their benefit and for our detriment. So as he says, we need to take responsibility for our own health. And the sooner we do that, the better off we will be. Your doctor, be he a naturopathic doctor or allopathic doctor or whatever, he's not responsible for your health. You are responsible for your health. He can help you. He can help put you on the right track. He can direct you. But you are responsible ultimately for your health, because you can come and see me and I can tell you all day what to do and how to do it. But when you leave, if you choose not to do it, or if you choose to do something different than what you were instructed to do, or if you choose to do something that, if I told you something that seemed ridiculous and you chose not to follow up and check it out, then there's nothing can be done. You ultimately are responsible for your health. You are listening to Phase 3 Wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. We're not going to take a break. We're going to go into our last segment, which is our healing herb segment. And, you know, let me know. We're going to skip. I don't want to skip the. We might not get to the healing herb segment because I don't want to skip this healing food segment. We may have time. It's a short article. I want to spend a little bit more time on that, but I thought that was very important to go through those things that people may not know about the healthcare system. This particular study came out. Our healing food is garlic. We've talked about garlic before in the past, but I've said before, when new research comes out, we may revisit some of these foods in our healing food segment. And this is interesting because there was first a guy came out saying he cured his stage 4 prostate cancer with baking soda. Then a woman came out said she cured her cancer with carrot juice. Some time ago in the UK, a farmer cured his cancer with wheatgrass juice. And now there's an obscure study showing that garlic can kill brain cancer cells without side effects. Now, of course, there's no money in that, but nevertheless, a small group of researchers at Medical University of South Carolina discovered something that's useful for anyone willing to properly consume lots of garlic. Here's what they discovered. They discovered that certain oregano sulfur compounds in garlic do kill brain cancer cells without disturbing healthy cells. They did this back in 2007. Now, it didn't get much mainstream press, if any. But 2007, that was 14 years ago. And it's interesting that when you look at this, if you go to Phase 3 Ministries at my main site, and you can look there, and I have one of our Simple Natural Health Secrets newsletters there. I have an entire newsletter on garlic, and it's called Garlic Antibiotics. Go there and read some of it. We didn't hit this 2007 article, but I think when we did that article, it was probably prior to 2007. But we talked about some of the benefits that garlic has as a natural antibiotic. And so here we have a small group of researchers at Medical University of South Carolina. They discovered, again, for anyone willing to probably consume lots of garlic, that it can actually kill brain cancer cells rather, without disturbing the healthy cells. And as opposed to using this study to further explore natural methods of nipping brain cancer in the bud, the cancer industry apparently chose not to follow up on this, which is makes sense because there's no money in it. I mean, from a capitalistic perspective. Now, three researchers teamed up in South Carolina for an in vitro analysis of what three natural garlic compounds can do to brain cancer cells specifically. And I'm not going to go and get too technical on you here, but type of brain cell called glioblastoma, which is the fastest growing brain cancer tumor common to adults. And two types of these cancer cells were cultured and three sulfur compounds from garlic were administered into the culture. And the compounds were DADS. And again, I'll put an article, a link, or maybe I'll write a little information at my website about it, because I'm almost out of time, so I have to speed up. And again, I don't want to get too technical, but just the compounds with DAS, which is just short, DADS and DATS. And like the last one is diltrisulfide and disulfide. And again, so I don't want to get too technical. Nevertheless, all three provided cytotoxic cancer killing effects, especially the DATS or the diltrisulfide, which induce cell death via reactive oxygen species production and a mitochondria mediated pathway, is what they said. And basically, the study pointed out that these compounds are able to get through the blood-brain barrier to induce cancer cell death and also to prevent future cell growth. Interestingly enough, the implication is that from the background of the study abstract, it is known that the protection against Garlic also can actually protect against brain cancer as well as help shrink tumors and kill brain cancer cells. And this particular study, this small, again, it was a small, small study, but the researchers were actually attempting to determine the mechanics of how these compounds were so protective, and they found out how, and not only that, they found out more than how. So they isolated the exact mechanics, and they detailed it in the full study, and they determined that these compounds are more than just protective. They do what currently accepted brain treatments are supposed to do, but don't, while leaving other healthy cells alone, which those standard of care treatments also don't. So the recommendation for garlic is that you peel one open garlic clove and expose it to air for 15 minutes or so to release the compound. Some even say crush them for more exposure, then consume them raw to get the full benefits. And now, I know this might not seem like it's inviting, but it sure beats dying from brain cancer. I am your host, Dr. Keith Henry. We are down to about 4 minutes left. That was our healing food, is garlic. Eating garlic on a daily basis can actually help reduce brain cancer. Garlic can actually kill brain cancer cells. Interesting, very, very interesting. Now, I am going to finish up here in the last couple of minutes with the Oregon Great Root herb. I started talking about it last week. And Oregon Great Root, as I pointed out before, is a very, very beneficial herb. It has antibiotic properties. It is a bacterial infection fighter, and it can be used both internally and externally. It's good to help heal your skin, your eyes, and your mucous membrane as a whole. It's also good to help purify the blood as well as your liver of waste. Anything that helps purify your blood and your liver is going to give great benefit to your health. As I talked about a little bit last week, it's often used and can be used in cases of acne, allergic rashes, eczema, and psoriasis. Something else that's good for that as well is chickweed, but that's another story for another day. But Oregon Great Root has been tested as a treatment for psoriasis, and it actually has been found to be very effective at reducing and preventing psoriatic lesions. It's also good. I'm not going to go back into detail of that again. If you want to catch that, just go back and listen to last week's show. It's up in the archives. You can go and listen to it. It's near the middle to the end of the show where we spent a lot of time talking about it. But we didn't talk about so much how it's beneficial for diarrhea and gastritis. I hit that just a little bit. So basically, what you can take away from Oregon Great Root is that if you have issues with, look a little bit more into it, if you have issues with acne, with allergic rashes, eczema, and psoriasis, anything dealing with the cleansing. Because typically, anytime you have issues with psoriasis and eczema, it's your body, your areas of elimination are backed up. And so your fifth kidney, which is what we call your skin, or your second kidney, I'm sorry, which we call your skin, is allowing the poisons to come out of it. And so as a result, you're ending up with eczema and psoriasis. When your other organs of elimination are open up, you don't have that problem, and everything goes out like it should go out. We're going to talk next week more in detail. Again, I didn't go into a lot of detail on Oregon Great Root because I started in that last week. I almost finished it. And so I just wanted to give a brief overview. If you want to hear more about Oregon Great Root, how to use it, how much to use, etc., go and check out the show from last week. Next week, we'll go into Asha, which is an herb you've probably never even heard of, most people. And again, next week, we plan to be here at the same time from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Phase 3 Wellness. I am your host, Dr. Keith Henry. Remember that we follow the laws of health. They are laws of mercy. That you can improve upon them. If you follow them, if you invest in them, your dividends will be great. Thank you for listening. The replay of this show will be available in probably about 5 minutes. download it, pass it to your friends, give the link to listen. Again, thank you for listening. Join me.